Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Eric Grant, the managing broker of our Oakwind Realty downtown office and also a longtime and veteran realtor, but he's also has a rich, rich background in the arts and a lot of other things. So, hi, Eric. Thanks. Welcome to the pod.
Hey, glad to be here. Good to be here. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Eric, why don't you share a little bit about your background?
I'm one of those guys who's kind of done everything until I found the love of real estate. So I've had a construction company. I've done historic renovations in Vancouver quite extensively with some building. I had a restoration company for several years. I've also had an opportunity to go to New York and do some theater, and which is an incredible experience. And then came back to Vancouver, then I moved to Calgary and built the largest private indoor horse riding arena in Western Canada.
Down
in Curtis. So that was an interesting experience. I had to travel down to Phoenix to actually look at soil samples because of the different shape of sand. I was sort of that detailed of it. So it was quite spectacular. And then I helped open up the Opus Hotel with John Evans and the Trilogy Group. And then sort of through that process, I realized, real estate was my calling, and I've been doing that for the last 16 years have no intentions of changing. I love it. So,
So I'm sure that background in construction helps you in your, as a realtor and as a managing broker.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. It's to be able to walk into a house and see the vision of what the house can be or could be.
Right.
People are like, oh, it's messy kind of thing. Some people that deters them. But for me, it's as long as the property is square, you can kind of do an awful lot of stuff. So my wife and I, we've actually, until the house we've been in now, we were in 10 places in 12 years.
Oh, wow.
So we kind of did the buy, the build, the renovation, find the next property. And then I have to sort of secretly say my wife is the one that's actually found all the properties that we've ended up in.
She's the realtor.
She's the realtor, yeah. I'm just the face to the name. She's the one that's been searching MLS all the time. She's on it all the time still. She kind of always turned the computer towards me and showing me, how about this, and look at this, and let's go look at that one. So
you've done a lot of flipping of homes. Yeah. How's that whole process? Like, what does that look like? What do you look for in a candidate flip potential property?
I think of the potential, right? It's seeing the ugly duckling on the process. But I think the first sort of major one we did was one up in North Van. It was a 1930 character house. We got the basement and completely redid that to get some rental revenue, and then from there we did the upstairs. It's where you draw with a house like that. It's like where do you draw the line? Do you stop at the electrical? Do you stop at redoing the windows and all that kind of stuff? So it all depends on sort of how much you really want to end up doing. It certainly is a passion for both of us. I'm more on the construction and the details side, and then once we get closer towards completion, that's when kind of Catherine comes in with the color schemes and the decorating, and this goes there and that goes there kind of thing. So it's a nice balance. And then the last one we did was a complete gut. It was a 1955 rancher, 1300 square foot rancher, and we gut it to the studs, added 600 square feet, and completely did everything. We new roof, new windows, new electrical, new plumbing, radiant floor heating. It really is a brand new house.
Well, that's really exciting, because when a lot of people invest in real estate, they invest in two different ways. There's some people that invest in flipping properties, like, so they'll go see something like a lump of clay and they'll form it to their best to their best use, or others buy for cash flow, long-term investments, right? And so they'll buy property, hold it for a long period of time, get rental cash flow from it, and so it's kind of an interesting two-parter. And I actually have known, like, some of the best clients for realtors are home flippers, because
it keeps going, right?
Exactly.
You know there's going to be the next project. Well, even you know, we're still on MLS looking, though, even though we've built our dream house, we're still always kind of looking at properties. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. So in terms of the design of those things, do you I've been to Eric's house. Eric, you can tell us a little bit about the construction of your home. It's a fantastic and a beautiful property, but you made it very, very custom for your lifestyle and your needs.
And we do that. We build for us. We don't build it to flip. Mm-hmm. And I think when we do eventually do sell them, people see that people it's sort of Mickey Mouse, if you want to call it, just to turn around and do a flip on it.
Right.
And you know, to sort of go back to what you commented on, what do you look for? It's the potential. It's the sort of the structural walls that can come down and could come down. I find a lot of people now want that open concept. You know, you look at for example, the 1930s character house. It was sort of room after room after room with you know, back then it was the central heating, so it really sort of the main room was the living room with the closed French doors off to the dining room and stuff like that. And it's knowing which walls you can take down and open up and then also having, you know, good contractors and good sub trades to be able to come in and see your vision as well and be able to tie that in. And that's sort of really the big thing. But then it's also budget as well, right? That certainly dictates the direction of what you want to go. There's, you know, and then there's also the sweat equity. How much sweat equity, you know, that's one thing that I always ask clients is when you are looking at a piece of property, you know, how much do you want to do? Is it a matter of a coat of paint, or you want to raise the foundation? So it really all depends on what extent that person wants to do. One of the things that I certainly do talk about with clients is time. You know, what is your time worth? If you're making X, and you stop that to build a project,
right?
Should you be at the office making your money and pay a sub trade to be able to do it? Who knows what they're doing and get in and out? And then that's the balance of whether it's a passion for you and or it's a hobby, or if it is sort of a flip to get it done in and out. You know, I have to say, when we did our last renovation, we literally were in and out in 4 months and a week.
Wow!
And you know, on that regards, the contractor was just spectacular, sort of on it and lining everything up. So
yeah, that's a very interesting and a hard lesson for a lot of people in business to kind of know what activities, even outside of work, are gonna kind of take away, and balancing like what the most cost effective. So you think you're saving, you know, $1,000 by stripping the wallpaper yourself, which I'm guilty of doing.
Yeah.
But it actually, like, you took three days of your life, and you probably could have
made more than $1,000.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just like trying to figure out that careful balance of, like, it was funny, and I'm still guilty of this now because, you know, like, as a lot of you know, I'm fairly frugal. So like every winter I shovel the walk myself, you know, and I like in our office we do the whole parkade ourselves. It's just like, but I'm like, why do I keep doing this?
There's the balance of also perception as well. What is the perception anyway? But it's also where your heart is too, if that's something that you enjoy doing.
That's true. That's very true.
Like you look at that, and there's something about getting out there and rolling up the sleeves and getting it done, and seeing something accomplished at the end of the day, whether it's a wall up or a wall down. You know, if you're doing the demo and stuff like that, like, that's always the fun part that I always like to do, is the demo aspect.
Yeah, you know, out the frustration.
Well, nothing better than pulling a wall down and then letting the guys sort of rebuild it and put it back together again. But that's that balance, finding that balance, creating balance in life. So
totally. So yeah. Eric, you grew up like your family did. Like a lot of projects, and your dad did a lot of
My father was very handy.
Yeah, very handy, that's right.
And it's funny because, you know, friends and family, they, you know, like my wife, and she's like, how do you know how to do that? And that's like, well, we just do it. Like, my brothers are the same.
Right.
We both, you know, I've got two brothers, we all kind of can just do stuff. And I think it's because we would hang out with my father in the garage, and, you know, fix a radio, or he'd be under the car, you know, changing the oil and stuff like that. Like, that's kind of what people did back then, I guess, is you know, tinkering and playing away. And so I just kind of learned, you know, I don't really have any formal construction training, but right. I just kind of know how to do it.
So, yeah. Do you think you passed that along to George, your son?
Well, I try yeah. to. I think, you know, the world has changed. So my son's 5 and a half now, and just an absolute bundle of joy, and very inquisitive, and certainly a boy. And it's funny, mm-hmm. I can't remember what he was doing the other day, and I was like, oh my God, that's me. That was me, you know, however long ago. And I said to my wife, I go, that's exactly how I was. And she's like, how do you know? And I said, it just, you know, something just clicked with me.
Yeah.
That's what I was banks. Like doing. It was, you know, sort of laughing and giggling and carefree and just, you know, appreciating and loving life.
So, yeah, George is a ham. So
yeah, he is.
Totally.
He certainly has a sense of humor. As
yeah,
well, so.
For sure. So like, do you see a lot of yourself in George? Or is he like a combination of you and Catherine?
He's definitely a combination of both of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
He really is. When he was first born, he looked very much like me, but
right.
just in appearance wise, he's now sort of melded, I would say.
Yeah.
But then personality as well. It's He is his own person,
yep.
that's for sure. But yeah, there's certain traits that you see that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my wife or that's me. So
it's, yeah. it's pretty what are some of your golden parenting rules or like golden parenting
gosh,
tips?
Golden parenting rules. Show up, right? Be present, I think is probably the biggest one is just be present. And someone actually said to us once, they said, if he says something, it's obviously important to him mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. And it might be insignificant to what we feel is insignificant, but to him it's important, and just to take that into account of his world, you know, at 5 and a half, what his world is and what's important, and even if it's come here and look at this Lego that I've built, like mm-hmm. that is important to him at that time. You know, he's going to destroy it in 10 minutes, but at that right. moment it's important to him.
Yeah,
and recognizing that and. Gratitude and one thing that my parents have always done just in life is through, you know, for all my sports activities and everything that I've done, you know, on theater and stuff like that, there was one of them always there.
Oh wow.
And it really resonated with me that they were there to support and they were behind me, even though I wouldn't necessarily speak to them, but I knew they were there.
Or yeah.
They would say that they were there, which mm-hmm. I know they were, and it is that. It's pretty amazing feeling to have that love and support from your family.
Yeah, having that consistency and like, yeah, I think that's fantastic. You know, just in getting to know Eric, Eric's a very, very important part of our Oakland office. He's the managing broker of our downtown office in Yale Town on Homer and Drake, and he kind of leads the charge. I think we have over 100 realtors. 100 realtors in downtown, and Eric is El Capitano over there. So he's a very, very important part of the team. So, but I would love to hear a little bit more about your origin story into real estate. So essentially, you mentioned that you worked at a very high-end boutique hotel and then transitioned into real estate. So what was the moment you decided to be an agent and why?
Well, I think I've always, having had the construction aspect, I've always been interested in property. For me, I feel that the transition was that moment of realizing the human aspect of residential real estate. You know, some people say, why don't you get into commercial? And for me personally, I find commercial real estate is a bit more numbers and unemotional.
Right.
Versus residential real estate, where someone walks into a piece of property and the tears start flowing and they start planning furniture and the shoulders drop and it's a life decision.
We're in my office. There's like a phone ringing. So this is raw and real here. So, but we're just gonna let it ring. No, keep going, Eric.
So I think that was the thing for me is that residential emotional aspect of it and. You know, that for me is the love of it, right? Is when someone walks into a piece of property or you walk into a piece of property with a client and you see that human aspect of it and it's to me it's like meeting the person that you're gonna spend the rest of your life with. It just some people go, well, why is that person? It just is. And I find that, in all honesty, the same with residential real estate. When someone walks into a piece of property, it just feels right. Mm-hmm. And that's where the experience and everything comes into play with regards to, okay, now that we've found that house for you, let's make it the reality and put it together in negotiation, right. And you know, the back and the forth. You know, for me, that's the art of the deal, is putting that together and handing over keys to a dream. You know, for even on the listing side, I always tend to hand over keys because it's a pretty amazing day.
Yeah, you know, it's a high that you know doing it for, you know, Eric and I have been doing this now for over 10 years. It's still there. Even when I help people buy a property now, or I'm sure that the same thing goes for you, or if I see an agent reacting to other people buying their properties, it's like, it's such an impactful and landmark moment in people's lives, and it's really, really fun to be a small part of it. So, like, oh, I think that's a huge, you know, big reason why we do what we do. So, you know, obviously practicing you worked for a developer for a little while as well, right?
I did. Well, in real estate, I've worked for a lot of developers doing a lot of cleanup and stuff like that.
So what's cleanup?
Cleanup is sort of the last, you know, 10 or 15 units of a property. You know, sort of the sales center was gone, so you're now selling properties off the color scheme sheets and floor plans and stuff like that. And usually at that point, there's a big hole in the ground. It's like, this is, you know, if you look up 25 stories, that's where your apartment's going to be.
Right.
Versus being able to walk into a sales center with the candles lit and the music playing.
That's right.
And that kind of stuff. So it was doing a lot of that cleanup aspect when products back then sort of wasn't completing. You'd sell, you know, the first 150 out of 175 units,
right,
kind of thing. And then from sort of that aspect, it was doing then a lot of the assignments and stuff like that in between, and then doing the resales and stuff like that once the building does complete. So so it's so that's, you know, dealing with developers, it's certainly a different relationship versus a homeowner, and I think for them it's on a numbers aspect. You know, I keep on saying to one person, just with regards to an offer along the lines of always present an offer, because I had, you know, for argument's sake, it was the place was listed $1 million, and I came in with an offer to one of the developers and for $900,000, and they told me to go away, and then the next week I brought in an offer at $875,000 and they signed it.
Right.
You know, you don't know what's going on in their mind with their business and all that kind of stuff, and also just even with regular clients too, you never know what has transpired in the course of that week that the price, even though they had an offer at a higher price, they might be willing to sign it now. So I think with the times as they are, you know, the market is certainly a new market, a
right,
challenging market, but also there's extreme opportunities in there, both on the buy and on the selling side, and I think it's working together with the other agent. And just being, you know, open line of communication to sort of say, look, these are sort of the numbers, this is where we feel it's at, da 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 da, and
right,
they're gonna defend their aspect and slowly working towards coming together. So
yeah,
I think it really is on that aspect. So
for sure. And you know, I think a big lesson that for realtors and for any business people is to not make assumptions.
100%.
Like you know, what Eric is saying is that, you know, you put an offer in and don't make an assumption that the seller is gonna just be outraged with it. And so, or like super pleased with it either, you know, on the converse side of the equation. I've, like, in the peak of the market, I would deliver an over asking price, no subject offer, and my sellers would be like, ugh.
Yeah, I'm like, exactly.
That's it? And
yeah.
And you know, like, we all faced that before, and you're like, what? You're just surprised. So it kind of goes both ways. So I think always knowing the facts and always knowing the truth and always being like honest in the approach, I think is such a huge win for any business person, because you get all the facts, you get to see exactly what's going on, and things like Eric suggests, like to just present it factually and on to defend them and on their side, is always the the best approach.
Oh, I agree.
For sure.
Well, then it's your buyer wants to buy it, my seller wants to sell it. Let's make it work. We're all going to look at the same numbers, and if we agree on what those numbers are, then it should be a relatively easy transaction on that regards. It's when you're I think when there's I want to win aspect,
right,
I want to be the conqueror.
That's right.
I think it doesn't tend to work.
Yeah, and it's that whole bearish or very very like over the top approach to selling property is sometimes works. So there's in any kind of sales classes and sales schools, there's two kind of closers. There's a hard closer and there's a soft closer. I think Eric and I probably are both soft closers.
Yes.
And some people that we know are very very hard closers, like this is it, yeah. Take it, blah. And yeah. So just knowing your audience and seeing what works for you is kind of the good a good thing to do. So Eric, obviously lots of different transition, so obviously, but you've been an agent now for well over 10 years.
Yeah.
So if you were to like reverse a clock and give advice to you, Eric, when you first got started in the business, knowing what you know now, what would be the three things you would?
Well, we teach the university as well,
right?
Here, so we've got Oaken University, which is a 6-week program here that we have, a little plug here.
www.oaken.com.
And it's one of the things that I talk about with some of the newer agents that come in is that it's like, if I could turn back the clock, and what would I do? And I
right.
think for me, number one would be consistency.
Okay.
Whatever it is you choose to do, be consistent at it. If you are going to be doing this, if this is your career, if this is your job, you're going to be doing it for 10, 12, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a consistency along lines of if it's mail outs, if it's door knocking, if it's flyers, if it's phone calls, whatever that aspect is with regards to sort of creating that farm area, do it. And whether it's every 60 days, whether it's 30 days, put that schedule in place. And stick to it for the rest of your career. Every 60 days, for example, mm-hmm. you're sending out a flyer to this building, or you're going to go do door knocking, or if it's whatever it is. Because if it takes 3 years to get traction, you still have another 12 years of your career left.
Right.
So
it's that long game.
It's the long game. It's I think we're kind of like this distraction.
The next shiny thing.
Yeah, the next shiny little coin. But it's if you are consistent, and then I would say, pick a farm area, start with either a building or 500 homes, and that's your zone.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if it takes 3 years, 5 years to get traction, who cares? Because the end game, you've got, if this is a 15-year career for you and it takes 5 years, and it won't, but if it takes 5 years, you still have 10 years of traction.
Yeah.
Which you will do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are sort of the two biggest things that I say, and then have fun, right? And I think that's my motto in life.
Yeah.
is enjoy it. As we talked about earlier, it's a pretty amazing opportunity to be a realtor,
mm-hmm.
and to be in the position that we're in to make these life-changing, assist in life-changing decisions for people.
Right.
So that's I would probably say that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting how when you get started, you're like, I'm not sure about you, but you get pulled in so many different directions,
100%,
100%. Because everyone and their aunt is like an expert of real estate and can tell you, and is a wizard of real estate. They can tell you exactly how to get successful in it, and I think just in really working with so many different agents, and Eric's worked with 100 plus realtors, and helping them with coaching through their business and through problems and creating great solutions for them. So what are some of the common stumbling blocks you see with a lot of people's businesses and a lot of people, and things that they should be watching out for?
Well, I think as you kind of just tapped into, there's so many sort of choices.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to, I shouldn't say everyone, there's some agents that they want to change the industry. I want to do it this way, I want to do it that way. And I find sort of over the course of time, it sort of revolves back to basics, right?
Yeah.
Just back
foundations.
To basics, foundation. If you're doing the basics, if you're doing your phone calls, if you're showing up, right? Literally showing up, that's half
mm-hmm.
the battle, right? As is in life. People do bus ads for a reason. People do flyers for a reason. People
right.
do notepads for a reason. They they obviously work.
Yeah.
And it's if that, you know, door knocking, if that's what it is, and again, if that's your forte, then do it and stick to it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I had one agent talk to me and go, oh, I'm going to, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to reinvent, you know, the industry needs change and I'm going to try to bring in my past career and I'm going to treat this. And they were in the business for three, you know, they've been in the business for about 3 or 4 years now. And I had lunch with them the other day and I was like, what are you doing? He's like, back to basics.
You know, it's really funny to see because, you know, we see a lot of new business people and it's kind of like, I use an analogy, let's say like you're learning how to play basketball. And the first thing you say is, I want to do a 360 dunk behind the back twirling shot from half court.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and I'm going to work on that first.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, you know, no, I think you should like learn how to do like a defensive stance.
Do a layup. Yeah, do a layup.
And like do a layup.
Yeah.
Or, you know, make sure that you don't travel or something like that. And just like all those basic stuff, it all works. And a culmination of really, really strong fundamental skills in business. So, you know, Eric and I work a lot. So yes, again, with Oakland University, a lot of new realtors about how to build the right foundations of a real estate business. So what do you think are some of the best like foundational, you know, foundational elements of a good real estate business?
Well, I think, you know, learning contracts, 100%. Right. You know, learning how to write a contract. You know, we you know, that's one thing that we could help doing. And it's you know, as one thing I always say too is, you know, if downtown's your market, you know, the downtown agents opens are on Friday, go look at product.
Right.
Like, go out there and start looking at product.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are you learning about the product, but you're also meeting the agents.
Right.
You know, and you know, you think about it on the listing side. If you've got two offers on the table, and there's an agent that popped in and met and introduced and established a bit of rapport and talk versus, you know, a text saying I sent you an email of an offer. You know, who are you going to most likely want to deal with?
Right.
Obviously, the one that you've engaged with and had a conversation with, and you know, Michael seems like a great guy. Awesome, let's put this deal together. Versus someone just sending a text or an email saying I've sent an offer over. So that's and then also it's getting to know the buildings. It's getting to know exposure. It's mm-hmm. getting, you know, the vantage higher up is certainly a lot different than on the ground floor.
Right.
So you can see, you know, what the views are, what the neighborhood's like, what's going on next door. What the quality of the finishes are. Is there a concierge? Is there a swimming pool? What level is the pool on?
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that unit at the open house might not be the one for your client,
mm-hmm.
but there might be a two-bedroom coming up in the building or that comes up in the building. You're like, okay, that's a great building. It might be a nice fit. You know, the exposure is this way. They want it to be north or whatever that is. It seems like, you know, that's going to work. So it's getting out there, seeing the product, meeting the agents, seeing what the quality of the building is. You know, is there parking at 3 o'clock? Or if it's out front, do they have to leave at 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
Or it's 7 to 9. Like all those little things add up to a wealth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to have that wealth of knowledge, you know, even just addresses and names of buildings. I think that in itself is important along mm-hmm. the lines of if an agent's talking about, you know, this certain building downtown, well, you know the address, you know what it is, you know there's this many units, you know
mm-hmm.
there's 4 suites per floor, da-da-da-da-da. Like, that's your wealth of knowledge that builds up over time.
Yeah.
But it's also easy to obtain. And I think if you just start doing your due diligence when
sure.
as a new agent,
right,
because you have that time, you, mm-hmm. you want to be out there and be busy, and, you know, you pick up or you meet someone at an open house, and I'm like, you can only email them so many times, or phone them so many times. Because it's true, right? It's gain that wealth, gain that knowledge. You know, to sort of go back about what do you do is like I said, pick an area. You know, whether it's downtown Vancouver, whether it's Kitts, whether it's Marpole, whether it's Burnaby, whether it's Coquitlam, whatever it is, you know, choose that pocket and be the expert in that pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, learning in about, you know, product knowledge and the things that you're selling is super key, and doing that background research. You know, I like to, when I first got started, I spent you know, the, just kind of the reverse side of the coin there. Because there's a lot of comfort in just doing research in a lot of cases. Yeah, you can do it all day. Yeah. So you can. So I actually, when I had my sales coach or my business coach, when I first got started, he limited the times I could do that. So I don't know if you, what your thoughts are here, Eric, but like, so they're saleable hours and non-saleable hours. So like a saleable hour is between 9:30 and 7 p.m. That's when you can contact someone. They don't think that you're a weirdo.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but then anytime before and afterwards, you know, you go ham with research if you like. And so, you know, and that was the saleable hours, was the ones that I had to actually be out there and engaging with people, and whether that's door knocking or cold calling or following up past clients or meeting someone for a coffee that I hadn't seen in 10 years, trying to get a referral or something like
something,
that.
Yeah,
yeah, just
but
anything.
Well, there was, you know, the movie Good Will Hunting, right? And
right.
There's a scene with Robin Williams and Matt Damon, and you know, obviously we know the story of the movie, but you know, Robin Williams' character asks Matt Damon, he's like, you know, you've read everything on the Sistine Chapel, you know what it, you know, the layout of this, the that, the da da da, but have you been to the Sistine Chapel? Do you know what it smells like? Do you know the intricacies of it? Like, and it's the same with real estate. You can research and research and research what a building is and this, that, and the other. But mm-hmm. Have you been in the lobby?
Right.
Have you seen what the suites look like?
Yeah.
Like there's that, again, going back to residential real estate, there's that emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
Walking into a place and it feels home.
Right.
It feels like home. And
totally.
That's the indescribable. And I think as an agent as well, you get that feeling when you walk into properties and what it feels like and whether it's going to work for your buyer.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So Eric, now just transitioning. So obviously, you're still an active agent, but you have added responsibility of being the managing broker of our downtown office. Now how has that been for you?
Well, it's challenging. Good challenges. It's you know, having been in the, or being in the business 16 years, sorry, it's nice to give back.
Yeah.
And I think this managing, you know, broker role has given me an opportunity to give back to the new agents. You know, I've had the opportunity to do 600 transactions, so I've got some knowledge in there somewhere, and it's now taking that knowledge and sharing that.
Right.
And so I think that's one of the aspects that I really enjoy about managing broker. It is a balance, that's for
mm-hmm.
sure. You know, you've got your door always open and you know, agents kind of popping in, so it's time blocking. I've
right.
learned, you know, from you, just to sort of block time out. But you've got an agent who's either going to phone you or come and knock on your door, and have you got a minute? And of course, that's your job. So
sure.
Put whatever you've got down. But it certainly has its challenges, and but you know, we've also got Shelley Schmee here and,
mm-hmm.
and Arlene Chang, who are, so that between the three of us, it's nice to have that resource as well to
right.
to bounce thoughts and ideas off, and just to concur that the decision that you're making and the answers that you're giving your agents are the correct ones.
Right.
So, yeah.
So in terms of, you know, just to rewind a little bit, in terms of the role of, what is the role of a managing broker in a real estate office?
Is it okay to say babysitter? No. No. It's, honestly, the agents that we have, it's more, I find a lot of it is growth guidance.
Okay.
And more just getting a second opinion.
Yeah.
You know, this is because we have competent, good agents in
mm-hmm.
our office, which, so we're blessed with that. So it's more along the lines of, this is just what I'm going to do. How do you feel about that? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you're great. Off you go. Versus getting the phone calls, getting the complaints, having the issues with the public, having the issues with fellow realtors.
Yeah.
So on that regards, we're blessed and lucky. And then on the other side of that, it's helping them and supporting them get to their goals
mm-hmm.
for them, whatever success is for them, helping them and guiding them and shaping them on that in that direction.
Yeah.
So
obviously you're engaging with a lot of top agents and a lot of agents that are doing really well. So what are some common threads from that you've seen of agents that are doing really well right out of the gate? So, you know, there's several agents that Eric manages that, you know, in the first year they're selling a lot of properties right out of the gate. So what are some of the common traits of those individuals and like, so that we can glean some things if we're just getting started or if we're...
Well, I think having a good sphere of influence initially, I find when people first get going, their first 6 months is dealing with their sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. And then there tends to be a bit of a lull. So it's keeping that sphere, how big your sphere of influence is. And I think it also too is having a clear focus, mm-hmm. as well, of this is what my goals are. This is what I'm not settling for anything less. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of agents in my mind that are like that, that pop into my mind. It's you know, doing the open houses. It's again showing up. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, there's some agents that don't do open houses, which I think is a new agent. It's a great opportunity for you to meet people. I know Morgan Brown, when she first started, she was doing, you know, two on Saturday, two on Sunday.
Right, four.
Yeah, like four a weekend. Why not? Right. If that's what a great way to meet buyers and sellers. Right. It's, you're also being introduced to sellers at that point as well. So I think it's showing up. It's you know, common sense, competency, all that stuff. Which again, for us is at Oakland is a good thing. We bring in competent people and common sense agents. So I think just that in itself is a step ahead. Not to say that other agents aren't, but yeah. So I think, yeah. There you go.
For sure.
Yeah.
And obviously you're working with a lot of high volume realtors as well that are selling a lot of properties. What are some of the things that you're seeing within their business, or you know, when they come to you? What are some of the common threads that you see?
Well, I think you should be answering this.
I'm looking
on the wall here. The deals already this year. You should be the one telling about that.
Well, I think, you know, what I find is that I love putting myself in other people's shoes and understanding their perspectives on how they operate their business. So, like, basically, for myself or for, you know, potentially some of the other top agents in our office, you know, I kind of put myself in their shoes. How do they run their business? How do they run their operations? And you kind of make a transition from being, like, an independent salesperson to kind of a manager a little bit of all the kind of the everything that needs to be done, and then hopefully you kind of evolve into somewhat of a leader where people are managing things and you're just kind of setting direction and doing some of those other things. So and then it's just trying to develop that the leadership ability, which is probably what I read many books on leadership, and I try to learn as much as I can, because I don't think I'm a natural. I don't feel like I'm a natural at it. So those are things that I look at, and so it's trying to stay away from like a lot of the the things that can bog down a business, which are are many things.
Oh,
so
yeah, of course.
Yeah, and trying to create efficiencies around them. So, and keeping morale of your team up is important, especially in this marketplace. You know, we're entering into a really challenging market. So we can touch into that. So we've worked through some challenging markets in the past.
Yeah.
So what has been some of the things that you've seen that have led to success during challenging times?
Well, I think.
And what are you seeing out there?
Well, it's you know, what we talked about in meetings is the old market and the new market. I think we're certainly in a new market. The biggest sort of challenge I'm finding is that buyers feel that prices are still going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, I'm going to wait and see. I think the number of, you know, statistically the number of sales is certainly down.
Yeah.
But for me, what I'm communicating with my sellers is if you're going from a one bedroom to a two bedroom, you know, I kind of, it's sort of the accordion effect. If for argument's sake your apartment is worth $1 million and the market drops, you know, 15%, you're at 850. But if you're and if you're going to step up your game and buy a $2 million place, well, it's dropped 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great time to make that move if you are going to go from, you know, your townhouse to a house on the east side, or a house in the North Shore, or a house out in Burnaby, or whatever that is. So I think on that regards, it doesn't matter what market you're in, if you're making that transition. You know, one of the conversations I have when I meet with a seller is, why are you selling? What is it, you know, what is it that you're doing to sell? Like, or why is it that you're selling now? Or why is it that you want to sell? And it's like, okay, well, my wife's pregnant, or my husband, you know, I'm pregnant, or whatever that is. Okay, well, that makes that decision very easy. So you're going to go from that one and den to a two bedroom or a house on the house. Or it's, you know, I've merged. I've got, you know, a listing now where it's a single mom, and she's now met her man, and
oh, wow.
And they're merging and stuff like that. So yeah, so it's those changes. So she's in. It doesn't matter what market it's in. She's now, we're now selling her place, and they're now buying a place together. And so I think on that regards, you know, the market can be low, the market can be high. Now is almost probably a better time because there are more options.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, people are you know, back in the day it was, you know, are we going to find a place to buy?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, people are like fighting over kind of bad properties. Yeah. So yeah. And now you can buy a good property at a fair price. So there's some things to, you know, I think there's some things to consider, especially I don't know about you, Eric, but the last kind of bad market we were entering into was in 2008. Obviously, yeah. You know, there was a financial crisis, a global financial crisis, and a mortgage crisis in the States, and there was a lot of bad stuff. I don't know if you remember that. And it was really interesting because everyone's different, but I always try to, if I can't control something, I basically, like, don't really think about it too much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's digging my head in the sand, but I really can't control it. I know it's there, but what I can control is you know, my behavior and the things that I do. You know, what I found was that in 2008, when I was practicing entering into a more challenging market, I was still very positive.
Well, but I also look at now. Sorry to interrupt. Sure. But I look at now, how many people wish they bought then?
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And I think we're in that exact market. It's also Vancouver.
Right.
We're in one of the greatest cities in the world. And when I talk to people, it's if you're going to buy in the world globally, where would you buy? You know, Europe's a bit of a mess. South America is a bit of a mess. Australia is a bit too far away, and they're going through a bit of a situation there. And United States, well, that speaks for itself. So it's you're really limited to the number of places. And then if it is Canada, we've got a safe financial system here. We've got safe streets where you can walk down the street. You're not going to get, you know, beat up or mugged or shot or whatever that is. And if it is Canada, where do you want to be? You want to be on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And so it's Vancouver, and we're limited by a border, by water and mountains. So is it going to go up again? It's going to go up again.
Yeah, and it's really, we live in such an amazing city. Just the other day, my girlfriend dropped her wallet, like maybe about 25-minute walk from our house. She dropped her wallet.
Yeah.
Cash in the wallet. Everything's in the wallet. Dropped her wallet. We didn't notice. You know, we get maybe an hour later, we get a ring at the door. And so, hey, ma'am, you dropped your this teenager who would be the prime suspect, who's the prime suspect of being able to like loot a wallet and
throw it in the bushes
and never, and he returned it and no thought about it, nothing, you know, and we're just like, oh, come on in, have a, like, let us get you like a lemonade or something like that. But you know, and this is like a common story that you get here in town, you know, like this is just like, we live in one of the friendliest, greatest cities in the world, and you know, and I truly believe in it. You know, living here my whole life, I love the city, I love the town, and so like this kind of stuff is a common occurrence. Like, we're in Canada, like nothing really. Like, you know, you see the States, there's like school shootings everywhere and like religious kind of issues where they're going, you know, you know, they're doing really horrific things. And how often do you see that stuff in Vancouver or Canada? Yeah. You don't see it that often.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're really, really blessed to have a very open, diverse culture here. You know, we're very accepting.
Accepting,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember when the we had a bunch of, when there was a Syrian refugee crisis, you know, our prime minister brought, like, you know, just welcomed everyone with open arms. And I remember some of our, like, it was funny, I had a listing in downtown for a doctor, and that doctor, he's like, Michael, I'm sorry, I have to cancel the listing. I know you're doing a great job. I'm like, what? Really? Why are you canceling my listing? He's like, I have signed up to allow Syrian refugees to live in that condo.
Wow.
And
oh, wow.
They're going to have to live there for 5 years. And I was like, what? Wow. I was are an amazing person. I can't, like, you're amazing. And he's just like, you know, that was our condo when we first bought it, and we want to give another family a chance because we raised a family there. So I got to, you know, because they were living further away, I got to meet the families. I got to help our team help them to get set up with some stuff. And, you know, so it's just and it's just, you know, and this is what Canadians do. It's weird. So, like, I just have so much faith, you know, in the city. And that's really what I, you know, continue to draw back on with my clients. And, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. And I share many times all the fantastic deals I could have had in 2008.
Oh,
and
I know.
You know, I could have bought that house in Dunbar for $750,000 that's now worth $4 million.
Exactly.
And I should have like done this and done that. I could have bought a duplex and
Street.
Exactly.
I think in 5-7 years everyone's like, oh, remember the market in, you know, 2019. Yeah. I really do.
When I have clients that come here from New York City or they come here from Hong Kong, they think Vancouver's like cheap.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, what? Yeah. And just like when we go to like Victorian or like on the island or something, like, wow, you get all this for that? Like, it's the same kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in the marketplace. And so it's such a, you know, it's just, it's your perspective on life, right? And your perspective on things. And I feel like you can see the same person or the same situation in totally different lights. It's exactly the same situation. And so hopefully we try to take that correct, well, there's no correct, but like that sunshine approach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Yeah. So Eric, just on a final note before we wrap up, what is there anything that you know, that you want to share or like a life lesson? You know, it doesn't have to be about work that you'd like to, like what are like the rules of Eric Grant's life?
Well, I think as you just talked about, I think that there's positivity. You know, yeah, you've got dark days, but you know, there can be dark days, but if every day is perfect, then you know, you've got no point of reference. So you've got to have some crappy days and makes the bright days brighter. But you've got, you know, you've got two choices in the morning. You got to be positive or negative. And you know, I choose to be positive and you know, look at the sunshine. So that's about it.
That's great.
Yeah.
And you know, on that note, Eric, thank you so much for being
thank
a part of the
me.
Podcast
honor,
today. Yeah. It was really fun to get connected with you again. So maybe you can do a quick, I don't know if we should be doing these plugs, but let's do a plug. Okay? So if you want to meet Eric to talk about real estate, or if you want to meet Eric to talk about your real estate business as a realtor from our office or another office.
Anytime.
How's the best way to get in touch with you?
So probably my phone, 604-518-4500, or our website is buyingvancouver, BUYING Vancouver.com.
That's it. Okay, Eric, thanks so much for being a part
awesome.
Of the pod.
Thanks
and
for
yeah,
me.
For
yeah.
for those of you that don't know, if you hope you're doing this, please like, rate, and subscribe the podcast. It really does help. I'm really into ratings lately, so I've been like getting a lot of reviews and ratings. So please, if you could do that, that'd be fantastic. And we can't wait to see you next time. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for coming. Cheers.
All right, Eric, that was good.
Yeah.